Jaya Tatha Madhava Tunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Kiravana Chari. Yamuna Kiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 12, which is entitled Devotional Service, Bhakti Yoga, Text 17. So I'll read the Sanskrit and the purport, and we'll share some thoughts and hopefully have some discussion. Yo na hrishyati na dveshti na shochati na kanchati Shubha Shubha Parityagi Bhakti Manya Same Priya. So Krishna here says, one who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A pure devotee is neither happy nor distressed over material gain and loss, nor is he very much anxious to get a son or disciple, nor is he distressed by not getting them. If he loses anything which is very dear to him, he does not lament. Similarly, if he does not get what he desires, he is not distressed. He is transcendental in the face of all kinds of auspicious, inauspicious, and sinful activities. He is prepared to accept all kinds of risks for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is an impediment in the discharge of his devotional service. Such a devotee is very dear to Krishna. Om Agyanta Marandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapudantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sadrajatan Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. I can say something for the benefit of the devotees here, for the pleasure of Shri Shri Radhe Shyam, and in line with Guru Parampara. So there are many verses in the Bhagavad Gita that emphasize this quality that's being talked about here. This verse says, one who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. So this quality is sometimes called equanimity. Sama. The Sama platform, Prabhupada speaks about being on the Sama platform. There's a way in this world which every quality that we talk about, it has a reflection form in this material world which is not quite the real quality. And this is every quality we talk about. So we talk about humility. There's a reflection of humility in this world that looks the same, but it's not quite. It doesn't actually have the power of true humility, which is actually a divine quality. Tolerance. You know, we can tolerate in this material world, and meanwhile, internally, we're getting there's a buildup, a volcano sometimes, after tolerating. So, this spiritual tolerance is a whole other quality. And the same thing with equanimity. There's a way, because we're suffering in life in so many ways, so we want relief, right? So this idea of equanimity can be attractive. How do I become peaceful, equipoised in the face of everything? That kind of equanimity is just a life tactic. It's a tactic that you have to figure out because life is tough and you just have to find a way to get a little relief, a little peace, and you try to... Your attitude becomes, well, I don't care. That's an equipoised person too, right? Whatever's happening, they say, well, I don't care. And they're fine in every circumstance, but you can see it's not coming from spiritual consciousness. So this whole material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So every quality we talk about. So the Bhagavad Gita, when it speaks of this equanimity, it's a very high quality. This is how high it is. I'll quote another verse where it's explained in the fifth chapter. Ihava tai jita sargo yesham samyestatam mana. Krishna says here, so this is his description now of equanimity. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. You see, so this is a very high quality, and it's very dear to Krishna. We hope to explore why that is. Why is this quality so dear to Krishna? But here Krishna is saying that if you have this quality, you've actually already transcended birth and death. So, it's a very, as we advance in spiritual life, our minds actually right now, the consciousness is very narrow. And so we get very absorbed in just our own life, our own problems, the ups and downs of our everyday life. We get very involved in that. And it absorbs the mind, and we get kind of caught in all of these dualities that are constantly changing. Happiness, distress, joy, sorrow. This is good, this is bad. It's happening all inside of our minds. When we start to advance spiritually, our minds, our consciousness starts to broaden, becomes larger. We get out of just the little small entanglements of every day. That's also there, and we deal with it. But the mind starts to expand, and we can start to have an understanding or a realization that I'm not this person, this little personality from this little place, and this is my family, but actually I'm a soul. I'm a soul that's fallen into this material world. There's feelings on that level. Where do you think a feeling would be there when you actually have some realization that you're a soul, but somehow you're disconnected? Or you've fallen into this material world. There's also emotions on that level of consciousness, which is higher. It's not that all the emotions go away. What would be an emotion you think could be there if you actually are experiencing that? Anyone? Experiencing that you're a soul, that you've fallen into the material world, that you're like a fallen angel. Yes?
Utter panic.
Panic. How so? Why so?
Because you begin to, you would realize your separation.
Okay.
From the very dear thing that you are so attached to.
Okay, that's a good point. There is a lamentation. So this verse says that equanimity, there's no rejoicing and there's no lamenting. But on a higher level of consciousness, there's another kind of rejoicing and another kind of lamenting. But that lamentation is that lamentation of the heart that I've fallen away from Krishna. But again, if you're in the consciousness of the soul and you've realized that, you're also secure. If you actually have realization, you're a soul. What accompanies that realization is fearlessness. So it's kind of what we, there's a kind of repentance in the heart that you'll feel, which is a very powerful emotion. But it's not paralyzing you or stopping you because you're also experiencing the reality of the soul. And so you know the truth of it. So it's a mix of a kind of lamentation, but there's also the joy of having some glimpse into the true, my true nature. You know it's true, it's not theoretical. And so that is the rejoicing on the spiritual, on this higher spiritual level. And but there, like you said, there's also a kind of lamentation as well, a kind of repentance. There's a nice verse, Krishna Bahir Mukahoi Bhogavanchakari Nikatastamaitari Japatiyadari. A devotee is lamenting that I've turned my face away from Krishna, and now I've become captured by the material energy and totally entrapped in sense gratification. Was there another hand that went up? Yes.
I was just going to say hope. You know, I would
think hope.
That now you understand a little bit more of who you are and
yes.
Absolutely.
Imagine the power of that hope when you have a realization that you are a soul. You see, all these emotions exist on a lower level. The whole material world is entangled in them. Hopes, desires, fears, lamentation, success, failure, happiness, distress, but it's all within the material context. And so that's what we mean by duality. Those just keep changing and shifting. But as the consciousness rises a little above that, you see there's something else. Actually, all of that down here, all of that changing of the dualities, all of that I can actually detach from. And so when the Gita says overcoming, you know, this rejoicing and this lamenting, it means on the lower level, but another kind of rejoicing and lamenting is there on a higher level. So the consciousness starts to broaden, becomes very large, and one sees so much more. What do we see? To what extent can the soul actually see the full picture? You know, there's this famous verse, Ishopanishad. Om Purnam Adaha Purnamidam Purnapurnam Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vishishyate. This is the actual vision of a person. What is that person seeing? This is how big it gets. This is how much can actually be seen. When you see the full picture, then your heart can actually start to feel secure, because you see the supreme controller is behind everything. So this verse says that the absolute truth is perfect and complete. And everything that emanates from the absolute truth, including this material world, is also perfect and complete. That's interesting, right? We think this world has so many problems, so many imperfections. How is it that it's actually perfect and complete, despite all of that? Because everything that's happening in this world, including the problems and the issues that come up and the suffering that comes up, why is that there? It's very intentional. It's part of the plan of God. Because it starts to awaken us. We sense something is wrong and we want to make a change. So even the mistakes of life, the suffering in life, it's perfect and complete the way it's designed. It's meant to be that way, so that the living being can awaken and start to make a change. I don't want to suffer. What is the solution to suffering? You know, many people have so many problems with, if God is all good, why is there suffering? But we have a very simple, easy answer to that. Why is there suffering? That's the thing that snaps us out. That's the thing that reminds us that, hey, maybe I don't belong here. Maybe I'm disconnected from who I really am. Why is this happening? Why am I suffering? And what's the solution? So the way our lives are going, even with the issues and the problems, it's very intentional. It's designed in such a way where we're meant to get realigned to the absolute truth. So therefore, in the Ishopanishad, that this material world is perfect and complete, yes, it's true. Even with everything going on, it's still perfect and complete. So the absolute truth, perfect and complete, everything that emanates, we also emanate from the absolute truth. Are we perfect and complete? This verse says, yes, we're also perfect and complete. But what about all my faults? Well, when we are not aligned, we have freedom, so we can deviate from this, from the harmony, the true harmony of life. We can deviate. And when we do, there'll be some reactions that come, and that's meant to realign us. What am I doing wrong? Why is this happening? What kind of consciousness can I create which will stop this suffering? This was Sanatana Goswami's question to Lord Chaitanya. His very simple question. Why am I suffering? What is the solution? That's the first real question in this life. We have so many questions. Nice purport, Prabhupada explains that everybody's asking so many questions and answers, so many things are being talked about and discussed, and but this is a very deep existential question. Why is there suffering? Why do I suffer? And if that is you have a real desire to know and to make a change, then Krishna will provide the guidance and the way. He will light up that way where you can see where to go. The devotees of the Lord are always there, and always searching out souls who are searching out Krishna. And as soon as that soul is ready, then the spiritual master can come and give the information of how to return to our original nature. So, how do we achieve, at our level of consciousness, how do we achieve this equanimity, this higher equanimity? We can't just go out and do it. You know, just be humble, just be loving, just be forgiving. But we know we meet resistance. We can't just turn that on in a moment. Right? Jesus said, go forgive your enemies. Can you do it? No, we can't do it. So what's missing in a lot of spiritual traditions today, All the information is there, what we're supposed to do, but what's missing is the how. How do you do it? In other words, the science. How do you forgive an enemy? You're just told to do it, and it doesn't work. Everyone just tries, and they don't actually forgive. You know, or be humble. Or you can't just turn these things on in your heart immediately. You know? But there's a process. There's a science. There's a way of learning how, and it's very gradual. And you need to be under the shelter of a person who knows and who lives it. And in that way, that person can start to prepare your heart to where these qualities naturally awaken. And then you can do it. There is a way to love every person, every living being. But that is a state of consciousness that has to be awakened through purification. We can't do it now. We're in material consciousness. Material consciousness cannot produce a spiritual quality. Right? So what do? We're under material consciousness, but we can't produce a spiritual quality. We can't see. Even though we see Krishna, we can't see Krishna. Ata shi Krishna namadi nambaved grayam indriye. None of these senses can perceive God. The eyes can't see God. The ears can't hear the name of God. This is what this verse says. Atashi Krishna namadi nabhaved grayam indriya. The senses cannot perceive God. I was listening to a class by Prabhupada recently, and he said, this is the challenge. You cannot see God, but still you have to love Him. This is our challenge. We don't see, but still we have to serve and we have to love Him. And what happens is, if we go on long enough with that, if we go on with that patiently and sincerely, then just imagine what Krishna's thinking when He's looking down upon us. This person doesn't have the proof that everybody's demanding, but they're still just giving themselves to Me. You know, time after time, surrendering, serving. And then Krishna, from seeing that sincerity, then He reveals, and you don't need physical eyes to see Krishna. You can experience Krishna in so many ways. You can hear His name and have full revelation of God just by hearing. Krishna is absolute, so He can reveal Himself in any way. It doesn't just mean He comes before you in physical form. Actually, Bilva Mangala Thakur, this great devotee, Vaishnav, he removed his own eyes because his eyes kept looking at things that were distracting him from Krishna. And this is amazing, because we think we want someone, we want our eyes to have proof of God. But when he only saw God once he removed his eyes, then he saw God. So you don't need these eyes. Nothing material can reveal spirit. But so if we're under material consciousness, and material consciousness cannot produce a spiritual quality, then what else do we have? What are we meant to do? What are we supposed to do? It's like you're trying to pull yourself out of a river by pulling at your own hair. Right? You can't do it. We're under the influence of Maya. So then everything we use, the mind is controlled by Maya. The senses, everything is of the material nature. So what am I to do? What is my hope? Association. As the devotee was saying, if we come in contact with a person who is beyond, who is operating from the spiritual platform, then it does what to us? It's not just association either, right? Because lots of people have association. You know, you talk to somebody, talk to a devotee, then you leave and leave forever. You see that, right? So what is it in you? If it's not the mind and not the senses, what is it in you that starts to appreciate association? What's going on inside of you? Some kind of awakening is taking place, right? This is faith. This is the awakening of faith. Now, Prabhupada says that faith, he gives a very simple explanation of faith in one place. He says, faith means a liking. If you just start to like the association of devotees, if you like coming to the temple, if you like seeing Radhe Shyam, if you like prasadam, That is the awakening of your faith. There's some attraction that's taking place. And that faith, when it fully blossoms, it's called love of God. That thing in you that brings you here, that thing in you that has a little attraction, that's the most holy, sacred thing inside of us. Everything else is material. Everything else is going to die. The senses, the body, the mind even. The mind will change completely. You know, with reincarnation, we think that, oh, I'm coming back. But that personality is so different than, in one sense, is it you? Is it you from this little town and this place with this family? No, it's a different you. So in one sense, the mind, and it's constantly changing. The body is constantly changing, but there's something very sacred in us. What is that? It's a longing. It's a longing. It's an attraction. It's an attraction to our true nature, and it's attraction to God. And it's so perfect. Think of Krishna. What is the meaning of Krishna? To attract. So why is there a longing in our heart? Because Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His very being and nature is all attractive, and therefore we have a longing in our heart. That's the explanation of that longing. We misinterpret that longing. We think it's, I need to get something here, I need to get satisfied here, I need pleasure. We get obsessed with physical pleasures, emotional pleasures. That's, the longing is there in the heart, it's vibrating inside of us, but we're misinterpreting it. And we're directing it towards all these other things, and we're getting disappointed. Time and again, we get disappointed until finally a realization comes that, what do I really want if I go into the core of my heart? I want absolute goodness, absolute love, absolute freedom. Isn't that what you want? That's the desire for Krishna. That is Krishna. He is the personification of that. He is absolute pure goodness, absolute pure love personified. So this longing in our heart, and the reason why equanimity is important. So in the material world, if we're just constantly pulled into this and pulled into that, and this is right and this is wrong, and this is my idea of good and this is my idea of bad, all of these dualities, then because the heart is so agitated, we won't really hear and understand that longing. But if the heart becomes a little still, if you start to withdraw from the dualities of the material world, then your heart becomes still, and when your heart is still, then you can start to hear the super soul, God from within, who's always talking, always guiding, always directing, but we're shut off, we're covered, we can't hear it. Right? This is a verse, the equanimity, how it reveals super soul. This is another verse from Bhagavad Gita. And this is 6th chapter, 7th verse. And Krishna says, "For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same." So here, this again, the dualities are always put together. Happiness, distress. Heat, cold. It's the heartbeat of the material world is the dualities. That's what's keeping it alive. The shifting of the dualities. And they just keep alternating one from the other. Right? And when you fight for one of them, you invoke the other. That's the trick of Maya. For example, sometimes there's war in this world. And so the people rise up and think, this is awful, this is terrible. Let us fight for peace. And then people fight for peace. And then maybe peace is attained for some time. And then what happens? Sure enough. Again, there's a reaction to that. People, what is this peace? These people are now exploiting us. We have to go to war. And then there's a war. And then there's a peace. And then there's a war. And it just, this is the material world. It's going round and round. And one invokes the other. It's like if you're really, really, you know, attached to something. I think that's a good thing. This is attached. This is something I like. This is something I like. But if you really get obsessed with that, then you also get the opposite. You will get the opposite. It may bring some pleasure, or you're attached to pleasure. Then you'll have to experience pain because it's going to be it's a temporary situation. And then the fear, it also fear of losing it, right? So you're invoking the opposite of what you want. Until you want something that's absolute, it has no opposite. The absolute has no opposite. It is pure absolute truth, pure absolute goodness. In this world, goodness has the opposite of badness. In this world, love has the opposite of hate. Pleasure, the opposite is pain. But if you go to the absolute pleasure, the absolute goodness, then there is no opposite there. You'll simply be living in a state of consciousness that is fully connected in relationship to that supreme absolute truth. So one who's established in this equanimity, it says, super soul is reached. So you'll hear God more in your heart, directing and guiding. And we're very fortunate because even though we're covered and we don't feel it, we have the representation, we have the representative of super soul coming through the guru. The guru is connected to super soul, so the words of the guru, the actions of the guru are connected. They are lined up, so we see an example of a person who is connected. And that gives us inspiration, like you were saying, that faith, that awakening that gets inspired by that example. And when you hear from such a person, those words are very different. There's only two kinds of sounds. There's material sound and spiritual sound. And Sanatana Goswami, he says in one place, there's two kinds of speakers. One with material desires and one with no material desires. That's it. Two kinds of speakers in this world. Everybody basically has material desires, so that sound vibration, it doesn't have full power to change the heart, to liberate you, to free you. But if you happen to be able to hear from a person who has no material desires, imagine that. No material desires. When you hear that sound vibration, when you hear the sound vibration of Srila Prabhupada, imagine what's in that vibration. Actually, what's in the sound vibration of a pure devotee, all of Krishna's pastimes are in the sound vibration of a pure devotee, no matter what they're saying. This is a mystery because within sound, you know, we think, well, this person just saying one sentence, how can, you know, but everything is included in that because it's of the spiritual nature, so there's infinite power. So that's why Prabhupada said, if you read just this one book, Krishna book, he said one time, if you read this one book, you will become fully Krishna conscious. And then he said, if you read this one chapter, just this one chapter from this one book, you'll become fully Krishna conscious. And then he said this one paragraph from this chapter. And then he said this one line, if you just read this one line and understand it, you'll become fully Krishna conscious. And then this is the most mysterious of all. One word. If you just hear this one word rightly, you'll become fully Krishna conscious? How is that possible? Because spiritual sound, spirit is infinite. Love of God is within every word of a pure devotee. And so it can awaken it in you. So we're fortunate because that's all happening within us too, that relationship to Krishna, that connection, that love is there. It's covered, so we require something outside of us to reawaken it. And super soul is guiding the pure devotee, and by that association, that relationship, we start to get inspiration, we start to get the faith starts to increase. But Guru also wants that we take guidance from super soul within our own hearts. He wants that for us, of course. Of course that's wanted, that we become equipoised so that we can hear that inner guidance from within, that direction, and experience more and more that longing that's within our heart. You'll feel it more and more, the more you become equipoised. And the other value of being of equanimity, Krishna says that one who's equipoised is very, very dear to me. The other value of it is that when you're equipoised, you are now free to serve. Now you can serve. Now you can serve with no distraction. Your mind is not taking you into this or into that. How was it that Prabhupada, it seems like he had all the time in the world, even though he was so busy, right? He would go for his morning walks, and he'd meet a few people, Bhagavatam class. It just seemed like he was hanging out. But look what he was accomplishing. All over the world, things were happening by his efforts, by his determination. How was he able to do so much? This is how. He was not on the mental platform. He was in a state of his own likes and dislikes and problems and issues. All of it was just let go of it, equipoised. Whatever happiness and distress that I think in my own mind, none of it was taking place. And therefore, he was just had full energy and time to just give in service to Krishna. So he just saw everything as an opportunity to serve. Not good or bad. This is good. This is bad. This is auspicious. This is inauspicious. We shouldn't call anything good or bad in this world. Even good karma, bad karma, both are a kind of an illusion. Really what's happening is we're performing certain actions and then consequences come. Calling it good and bad keeps us in that duality. It kind of keeps us, it reinforces the illusion of duality. But if you just see it as a thing coming to me in my life, now let me respond, and from what I've learned of Krishna consciousness, let me respond with integrity, let me respond, let me not call it bad, let me not call it good either, let me just see it as something that's coming. I've created something, and now here it comes into my life, it's a consequence. Let me drop the judgment of good and bad, it's all speculation. We don't know what is good and what is bad. We think this is really good right now in my life, this is great, everything's going great. And then we see it turns into something else and I was off. Or we think this is awful right now. You ever have this experience? This is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. And then later in life, you look back and you think, wow, that was so important, so necessary. So we keep tricking ourselves as if we can see what's good and bad. So better we just let go of that and just take life, everything that comes, a kind of acceptance of it. Because after all, why is it coming? What causes it to come? I do. It's like we're inviting these, we have a certain consciousness and it attracts a certain kind of life. So I'm the creator of it. And then it comes and then I want to fight it and resist it. You know, your karma comes and then you want to resist the reaction. But actually it's meant to be there. It will do something. It will change you. It can realign you. That's the purpose. Karma also has great mercy in it. Karma, the law of karma, is also God's mercy. It's very merciful. It's a process that will realign us if we see it right. But if we try to resist it and fight it and call it bad and evil, we're all mixed up and we're just entangled. That will go on life after life after life. So this is another important way of coming to this place of equanimity, is we can drop the judgment, the conclusion of this being good or bad, and just take everything that comes to me in my life. Just accept it. If you take it in, even though it's painful, it's difficult, there's a way we have to kind of take it in, and we can have a prayer when we take it in. Krishna, please let this change me. This is difficult, but it's doing something inside of me. Please let it do its work. Let it change me. I accept it. After all, I've created it. We want to go outside, blame outside. There's another trick. So many tricks of Maya. Maya is very, very tricky. Prabhupada would say the snares, so many snares of Maya. So this, we have a consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes it's called svabhava. The svabhava, what is that? There's something inside of us which is the sum total of all your thoughts and feelings and desires and intentions. The sum total of all of that is called svabhava. And that particular thing inside of us is what attracts what comes to us in life. So that's important, because when that svabhava, when we work on that, when we try to change that, when that svabhava reunites to Krishna, when the nature starts to again become attracted to Krishna, then all we'll get is Krishna in our life. That's all we'll see. That's all we'll know. And that's why devotees become obsessed, attached to Krishna, because their consciousness has returned to that state of just love of God, and they see love of God everywhere. Right. So that consciousness, this is the real work in life. We shouldn't get fooled by anybody in life who's directing us somewhere else. The most important thing to focus on is consciousness. That is, everything happening in the material world is just our consciousness thrown on a large screen. All the fighting, all the splits, all the division, it's consciousness that's split, that's divided within us, and it comes outside. And we try to solve it outside. You see the mistake? That'll never work. But if we think, I'm causing this somehow, I also have a part to play in all this, and let me just therefore purify my consciousness. It says in the Katupanishad that all, so many living beings, their senses, their eyes, the mind, everything is turned outward at the world. And it says a few wise living beings turn within. Just a few. A few wise living beings, they look within to consciousness and they think, this is where, this is what's where I'm supposed to be focused. Imagine if this world, somehow we didn't get distracted. Everything external is a distraction in a sense. And all the fights are taking place externally because it's happening within us being projected out. But we try to solve it out. And that can never work. We just feed the shifting of the dualities. Okay, so I'll just end again by summarizing this verse, which Krishna says, one who's equipoised, who's steady in both happiness and distress, that person is very, very dear to me. And so there are ways, by accepting the whole of our life, we start to come more into the middle, more into that steady place. And then we find ourselves seeing, giving it less importance. And because of that stillness, because the heart becomes a little still, then you can start to hear Super Soul. And you can start to feel your own longing for God. When that longing for God truly awakens, then nothing can stop you at that point. It doesn't matter, gossip, devotees are falling down, this thing just happened, your faith doesn't get shaken. It can't, because it's, what does that have to do with the longing in your heart for God? That's still there, you're feeling it, it's vibrating. So why would anything external affect it? So until the longing awakens for God, we're a little shaky, it's a little shaky condition to be in, because someone may do something and then I may lose faith. But that means my faith was dependent on something external. So it has to be awakened, the longing. And we'll hear that longing when we become more equipoised. And we'll also be free now. Once you're equipoised, you're not controlled by the world, you're free now to serve completely. And we have examples, we can see that in Srila Prabhupada, how much he was able to give and do because his heart was free from all material attachments and pullings, and just everything was just service. So we'll stop here. Anyone have a comment or question? Yes, for you. Mike, is there a mic?
Thank you, Mahaprabhu, for the nice
comments. Sorry, my back was to you the whole time.
Sorry, I'm sitting here. many points you touched on. One was that everything is perfect in this material world. Oftentimes we don't see that. It's, as you say, bad, we label bad and good. So I had a realization some time ago about all the chaos that's going on right now. That this is of course Krishna's arrangement, everything is. But Prabhupada said that the first qualification for spiritual life, or maybe not the first, but a very important one, is to be disgusted with this material world. Not to try to find happiness in this place. So all these things that are going on, the chaos that we see today, is Krishna's arrangement. To get people to become thoroughly disgusted. And in my lifetime, I haven't seen such chaos. It's extreme. So this was kind of a liberating realization for me. Because now you don't have to, you know, take sides or try to figure out what's going on, get lashed on to conspiracy theory or whatever's going on. It's all Krishna's arrangement. We can't figure out. We don't. That's not our business to figure it out. Just accept it and see it for what it is. That's it.
Beautiful, powerful point. So true. This material world is designed. It's actually a plan. There's a plan behind the suffering and the misery and the. There's a plan.
Maya's a great teacher.
Right. Krishna's very intelligent, so we shouldn't. Why, if Krishna's so good and great and intelligent, why is this material world so crazy and bad? And that's exactly why he's so intelligent. That wakes us up. And that will be the thing. If we can't just be humble and learn that way, then we have to learn sometimes through a little suffering.
One other point you made was that I think it's in the purport, Prabhupada writes that if we lose something that's very dear to us, then we don't lament. But then I immediately thought of a family member. So how would you respond to that?
Everyone heard the question? So Krishna said that, you know, if you lose something very dear to you, then one should not lament. And the question is, well, what about a loved one, a family member? So, of course, there's sadness and there's a lamentation that's very natural for losing someone we have affection for. So, again, in the material world, the lamentation is very different. There's illusion that's taking place there, and there's this clinging, and there's this grabbing, and this holding on, and it's very, very painful. Right? So, a certain lamentation is natural. Even one place, Prabhupada explains that this, you know, he gives the example of Arjuna. When Arjuna was informed that his son had died in the battle of Kurukshetra, then Arjuna cried. And Prabhupada describes that as a very natural response of a father, of a mother. So, but the lamentation that's being talked about, whenever we hear these dualities, happiness and distress, you know, a devotee has all of those things still going on, but the quality is a little different. There's lamentation and there's lamentation. You know, there's a devotee's lamentation and there's someone who's covered by Maya, their lamentation. And so we have to transcend this lower lamentation, which is, it's experienced as the worst suffering. You know, it's mixed with so many other things. So, these are just some thoughts, but, you know, definitely we can say that lamenting the loss of a loved one is very natural. But we hope to get to a place where we have simultaneously this attachment, this love, this affection, and also a detachment, where we can also let the person go. We want to come to that. That's a beautiful love. That's so much more beautiful than a love that just thinks, never, you're mine. I work in as a hospice chaplain, so I see death a lot. And it's very rare to see a kind of love where the love is there, the affection is there, you can see beautiful words are expressed, but there's also this total acceptance and letting the person go and be. Sometimes you see it, sometimes it's there, and you can. That's a higher quality of love, simultaneously attached and detached. A little difficult to because like a mother, you know, like a mother loves the children, but if the mother just will never let the children go and grow and do what's needed for themselves and let them go, then that becomes a disservice. So the mother can learn this lesson of love and giving everything, all that affection, all that, and also now, this is also another soul on another journey. So I'm just trying to make a distinction between the different kinds of lamentation and how there is a healthy way of lamenting and there's a way that's very binding. And we as devotees, we start to get a feel for what this higher kind of lamentation is, which is very, it's still attachment, it's still affection, it's still love, but it's also with realization and you can also see and let the other person go. Bhakti Lata, you had something? Comment? Question? This is my good wife, Bhakti Lata Devi.
Thank you, Ghanashyam Prabhu, for your class. I have a question about why does Krishna specifically say that this person whose equipoise is dear to him? What is it about this quality that makes someone dear to Krishna if they're equipoised?
So I mentioned a little bit about that, that once a person is equipoised, then they're capable of dedicating themselves to service. That's why this verse says, Bhakti man yasamait priya, my devotee who's equipoised. So equanimity is always connected to devotion. Because when you're equipoised, when you're still from the material whirlings, now you're free to serve with no hindrances. You see? If you're not equipoised, your mind will be pulled to so many things, you can't give yourself. You can't serve. You're distracted in so many ways. But if you achieve a state of silence or stillness within, equanimity, where the modes are not pulling you, then you can give 100% in service. So it's like the gate to pure devotional service.
That seems a little transactional. It seems a little like, well, you're dear to me because you're not distracted. So that's why you're dear to me.
No, you're dear to me. You're dear to me. That's why, again, Bhakti Mang, my devotee, is dear to me who is equipoised. So it's pleasing to Krishna because it's a quality that leads to pure devotional service. What pleases Krishna? There's not really what pleases Krishna has to be of the same quality of Krishna as Krishna. You know, Krishna is not so interested in material things or ordinary things of this world. There's no taste there for him. But what really pleases him is love and service. Now, equanimity is a divine quality. It's a relationship to the material world in a sense. It's a kind of healthy detachment from the material world, which now allows an operation of pure devotional service to the spiritual. So, and this is how it's often used in the Bhagavad Gita, and so many verses talk about becoming equipoised in the face of the dualities. It's a divine quality. But you could say if there's no devotion, it's kind of the Brahman platform. Because you're detached from matter. So it's kind of like this in between matter and spirit. But now, therefore, it's always in connection to devotional service. My devotee, who's equipoised, is most dear to me. That's how it's used here. So there is a connection with devotional service, and that's what makes it perfect. I think we should probably stop here. Thank you so much. I'm grateful for this opportunity, and I appreciate your presence here, and I hope something was there that could impact you and bring you closer to the lotus feet of Krishna. Hare Krishna.